Hey, welcome to a special edition of Building a Business That Lasts. I feel like I say it's special edition all the time, but every episode's kind of special.
Hey, this one is special.
That's true. Super special. My name's Jay Owen, your host on a quest towards building a business without being worn out and stressed out and ready to quit. And today I'm doing a team member interview. So you're going to get some behind the scenes. And today is especially behind the scenes because Miss Hannah Evans is with me. Thanks for being here, Hannah.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
And Hannah has to deal with a lot of things, specifically me, because she's my executive assistant, and she's our coaching operations manager, which basically means she does all the crazy ideas around coaching and live events and workshops and everything else. But before we dig into all that, because I know a lot of people are interested about like doing your own live event and how to transition into, you know, different risks and how we tolerate that as a company. Hannah, tell us a little about more about your role and just kind of your story of how, maybe how you got here and what's life like for you?
Wow. All right. We have all day, right? So I am, I guess, to go back to how I even started, that was kind of a wild ride.
Oh, yeah. That was a good story.
Yeah. So that'd be probably good to talk about. So I actually applied for a role in support on our like website side, supporting the websites and things like that. But I guess I put in my application. You guys were already through the process. I think mm-hmm. you said you were down to like two people already, but I didn't know that when I applied. And my husband took me out to a concert, like a Christian concert or something.
It was Need to Breathe.
Need to Breathe. Yeah,
but it was Johnny Swim was the
yeah,
opener, which is why you were there.
Johnny Swim, because I love them. Anyways, we were there and I had just applied. I'd worked at a company for 4 years. So it was kind of a wild thing that I applied, but I just felt like I needed to apply to this. And I just, there was something about it that spoke to me and I applied. And I even told my husband, I don't even think I told you this, Jay, but Nate was like, really? Okay. You know, like he wasn't, and I had already applied. I sent in the application right. before I even told
him. It'll be all right. It'll be all right.
Yeah. And I think I had told him that day or the day before we went to this concert and I look over and like at my knees, like directly in the
literally room, right in front of you.
You and Claire. And I grabbed Nate's, my husband's arm, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's Jay Owen. Like, that's who I applied. Like, I applied for a role at his company, and he hasn't gotten back to me yet. I was like, this is so awkward.
Meanwhile, I leaned over to Claire, and I'm like, oh my gosh, the girl behind me, I'm pretty sure that that's Hannah Evans, and she just applied for a role. Because I knew Nate, like, through the fire department, mm-hmm. because one of the guys who works here, Chris, used to be a firefighter. So I recognized Nate, and then I knew you like through him as a result of that. And I knew that I had an email from you that I had not even replied to because I knew that we were like down to the last two people. Yeah. And I was like, oh my gosh, I guess I have to turn around and say hi because this is awkward.
I know. And I avoid awkward situations at all costs. And Nate was like, just talk to him. I was like, oh, heck no. Like, I wanted to just like leave the concert. But anyway, so that was really bizarre. I ended up, you know, talking my way into getting an interview. No, I think you just felt guilty that I was like behind you at a concert.
Well, no, I think that in general, I'm like a big believer in like providence. Like, I don't think that there's that many coincidences. Like, I really believe that God puts certain things in motion and puts certain people in the right place at the right time. And it was like, the chances of that were impossible. It wasn't like it was like a general admission where we sat down and we both had bought our tickets many moons mm-hmm. before that. We had no idea either one of us were going to be there. And in that whole auditorium,
and it was a seat directly in front
right.
of me.
And there were like
two rows down to the left. It was right. Like, and then we were at one point like worshiping and you were like worshiping in front. I don't know. It was just bizarre.
Anyways, I know. So crazy.
That's kind of how I got my foot in the door here, you know, snuck my way into the company.
So then we interviewed you.
Yes. Yeah, so we interviewed. You interviewed me. I got a role. I worked in support.
Who was in that interview? Do you remember?
Travis and Chris Wright.
Yeah.
And you.
Uh-huh. And after that, we were all like, oh, we're hiring her. Like, it was like, we had two other people that we kind of like liked both of them. And they seemed like pretty good fits. But then after you interviewed, we were like, oh, it's obviously Hannah.
And I remember, I went home and I wrote a email follow-up, you know, doing my homework, follow-up interview. Thank you for taking the time. And then you replied
so funny.
Right back. And pretty much it was like I had the job. So that was just really cool. But anyways, that was with support, which is not at all what I do now.
I know. So, welcome to the ever-changing world of small business.
I know. And now I am your executive assistant, keeping you on track.
Mm-hmm. God bless you.
And it's a hard job. and coaching operations manager, which is a brand new thing that we just started this year. And it's gone really, really well. So,
yeah. So it's interesting because before the podcast, we were talking a lot about how the last two team interviews I've done, I've talked a lot about like transitioning to different roles and stuff. But the reality is like that's part of dealing with being in a small business, especially if I'm running it. But a lot of entrepreneurs are like that. They have, you have to be willing to change really quickly as an organization, especially when you're small like we are. You know, there's only 15 internal team members here. And so if you're not willing to move quickly, you're probably not going to survive as a business. And as a result of that, if the organization needs to be able to change and adapt, the people within that, which is what the organization is, have to be willing to change and adapt. So your role changed a lot. And part of that was you were, we can talk about this a little bit. You were, you're super interested in like personality profiles and like coaching. Talk about that a little bit.
People and psychology.
People in general. Yeah.
Yeah. So actually I'm not even sure if you know this. My first, well, major in college was graphic design, and I quickly changed to psychology, and I was going to get a degree in psychology from UCF.
That's why my presentations are so good, you know?
Yeah, I know. I just can, you know, got that brain power. But anyways, so I've just always been interested in that. And Nate got his degree in psychology from Flagler College, actually. So
I didn't know that either.
We bond over dissecting people and stuff.
That's so sweet.
Not really. It's just interesting to see how the world works and how people think and whatever. So, yeah. And so back to even the role thing, just to jump back to that, support, the role that I was hired for initially was not my like niche strong suit skill that I brought to the company. And I mean, you knew that I didn't have a lot of experience, but I just fit into the culture, I think.
Yeah.
But going to your point with when businesses are small, being able to be flexible, I think if you have a crazy amount of skill in one aspect and like that's why you were brought in and like this is your, you have a master's in this one thing and you've spent your whole life and you know how to do this one thing, great, you know. But if not, then you're in a small company, then you should be able to shift and move and whatever.
That's why those kind of expertises tend to work better in very large companies, because very large companies need hyper niche, hyper specific roles. We're in a small business. I need people that are problem solvers.
And willing to learn. I think that's the main aspect. 100%. You're willing to learn and become an expert on something that you might not have been to the beginning. But anyways, yeah, so the idea behind that is I've always had my interest in people and helping people really is the underlying aspect there, but I just like to learn about that. And so I think moving in, so helping people obviously spoke to me being your executive assistant. I think I was already helping you on the side and I have some extra time, let me help you with this. And that's how I kind of slithered, snaked into that role. But anyways, then the coaching aspect really came from me, I think was, I think I had voiced to you after we did a team training that I wanted to personally on my own become certified in like teaching personality types or something like that, just because it was a passion and interest of my own. And I think that's how the topic of coaching started.
And you're like such a hungry, and we talk about this idea, if you've not, people are listening, if you've not heard of it, there's a great book by Patrick Lencioni called Ideal Team Player. And in it, he talks about the ideal team player being somebody who's humble, hungry, and smart. And usually people have like one that's maybe stronger than the other. But ideally, a good team member, an ideal team member, that's why the book's called that, would have all three. And so you are naturally like just a very hungry person. I mean, at one point you were in school for a degree, working on that at night, while
I'm
also
crazy, basically, what you're saying.
While also being the mom of two kids, while also being a great wife, while also having a husband that's a firefighter. So half the time, or I guess a third of the time, to some extent, like you're basically a single mom, because he's at the fire station, and so I'm like, gosh, how does this girl want to do one more thing? But it actually fit right in because I had already been thinking about this idea of wanting to do live events. Some of the work that we were already starting to do was kind of in that consulting coaching vein. And the reality too was I didn't really need a full-time assistant, but I needed work for you to do, obviously. And I thought, well, this seems perfect because Hannah's willing to adapt really heavily and I have all these new things and her interests kind of line up with stuff that I'm already interested in that I kind of want to do. So then you did personality training.
And what we were doing consulting wise, and we were doing some marketing workshops and things like that. We were getting such great feedback from internally and externally. And I think everyone all around it was just perfect fit into like our mission, right? Like we go back to talking about who we are as a company and our mission, and all of that was already naturally progressing in that. But we were all busy with what we were doing already. We needed, you needed somebody that could focus on helping establish that.
So. Yeah. So then you did, you got certified in the DISC personality training. You wrote a whole workshop around that. And then we got this brainy idea to do a live event in the middle of a pandemic. Well, the idea was to do it at the end of the pandemic, but
it just kept going. Where it's still happening.
Right it seems now. Like it's we're just like going to live in a permanent pandemic. So let's talk about the live event a little bit, because I think that'll be something a lot of people think, like, I might do a workshop, I might do a live event, or you've been to live events and you wonder like what goes on behind the scenes. We had done a lot of workshops, like Hannah said, where there'll be, you know, 15, maybe 20 people, mostly like 15 people at an internal workshop. And this was the bigger idea. We wanted to do like 100 people, you know? So you kind of took the reins of that and started leading it.
Yeah, I definitely took, I think I bit off more than I could chew at the beginning, but then obviously that's the great thing about doing this, not as an individual, but as a team, because we have the resources and the team members that, you know, now became an events team for 2 days. But yeah, so the grand idea was a 2-day live event with aiming at around, I think we said 100 max out at 150.
Well, originally we wanted like 150, but then we changed it because of the room.
Yeah, our ideal size was about 100, I think, as far as spacing, because we had to adapt again to like pandemic. We wanted to have people be able to space out a little bit, whatever. So that was the idea and pretty much what we discussed. And then it was up to me to kind of run with the idea. So, yeah, I guess just what goes on behind the scenes of that would be grand concept, right? So that came from you and leadership team, an idea, and how it morphed into reality was a lot of work that people don't realize goes into it. So I think we had 7 different vendors that we had to work with. And now when I say work with, it's not just sign a contract and it's done. It's constant communication. It's checking in to make sure arrival times are there. Do they have a parking space at the venue to be able to unload? It comes down to every little detail.
Which is not my strength.
No, but it is mine. Luckily. And I had a lot of support from Allie on our marketing team. We kind of became a duo. But I think if someone is asking themselves what goes into pulling off an event, I think you need a strong concept with a why behind it. Because you can't just, I mean, you can pull off a big event or whatever and not really have a purpose. But what really drives the event is the why behind it. And we wanted to pretty much showcase our consulting, teaching, and experience to launch into our new coaching wing of the company. That was part of our why. And really to ultimately help people in a season that they really struggled in for a year with the pandemic. And that we felt, I think, team-wide really passionate about that. So I think that really drove the idea. So I would say having a strong why, having the support to be able to pull it off. And so in our case, it was our whole team. We have a team of, I think it was 14 at the time, 14, 15. Everyone had a job at the event. And then really,
it wasn't really their real job.
No, it was not their real job.
It was like a new fake job.
They got very detailed instructions from me and Allie with exactly where they need to be and when they need to be at by the minute, with a very detailed schedule. But yeah, there's a lot more that goes into an event than people realize. A lot of money goes into an event, a lot of time, a lot of patience. And then we always laugh in the office about pivot, you know, from friends. But you really have to pivot. I mean, this was during a pandemic. You're with the whole team. You have people buying tickets.
There's people that questioned if we should even be doing an event yet, because it was like never ending. It still is. And I'm like, well, at some point we just got to do it. And people that are signing up are either going to be comfortable for it or not. And if they're not, then we'll give them a refund. But everybody showed up and it was a full house. And it was so great for me because, like, my passion is speaking and teaching and being able to lead in that way. And all I did legitimately was, I mean, I did a lot of pre-planning, you know, with everybody else. But at the event, I just showed up and taught. And I couldn't have done that without y'all. But I think what that makes me think about as it relates to, like, team members, since this is a team member interview, is like, I think that, like, our personalities can have a lot of tension between them. Mm-hmm. And even, like, you know, Chris and Allie's personalities have a lot of tension between them. But because we respect each other and we trust each other and we know that we're all fighting for the same thing,
yeah,
like, that tension is actually really valuable. So, like, talk about that idea a little bit, like, how that's affected, you know, or what you've seen, not even necessarily between you and I, but, like, the team as a whole or other teams as it relates to personalities. You can't just have all the same people on the team. You need people think, I think a lot of leaders think they need to clone themselves, and they're wrong.
Yeah. No, I think you, going back to the whole people aspect, you become a better person when you have different personality types and influences around you, because it's going to mold you. You don't want to stay the same. If you do, then I don't really want to be around you, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I know.
But no, I think as people, we want to strive to be better. And I think to be better, you have to have tension, like pressure and tension and good stress, not just bad stress, is healthy and it's good for you. And that's how you grow. You know, that's why kids go to school, so that they can learn. They don't want to go to school, but they're becoming a better human being and learning responsibility by doing these things.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think teams, when they hire outside of their own personality type and outside of their strengths, it's going to make the organization as a whole that much stronger. Because, yeah. I mean, everyone, like you talk about a lot, like blind spots. People have blind spots, but then outside of that, you have, I mean, you can't see your, you have weaknesses and then you have blind spots. You can't see your blind spots, but you can see that and admire that in somebody else, and they can help encourage that and bring that out.
Mm-hmm.
Them.
Yeah, another agency owner, friend of mine, his name's Brandon West, reminded me this the other day. We were on this agency group call, and there's a quote by Andy Stanley that says,
"Love him."
The question is this a tension to be managed or a problem to be solved? And so the reason I say that is a lot of times people see tension in their organizations or in relationships, and they think, like, I mean, between Claire and I, like my wife and I, like, there's a lot of tension between our personality types. She is a super detailed, super organized, like, you know, kind of person, and I am not. I am a, like, wing it, you know, adventurer. And so there's tension between that relationship, and it's the same thing with team members, but that's not bad.
Mm-mm.
You know, the tension is what
You're
allows things to move forward.
Because of Claire.
Right, 100%. Yeah. If I'd be a hot mess without her at home, and I'd be a hot mess without you here. And so I was for a long time. And so I think that people need to think about that in their own relationships, because I think when people feel that tension, the only time it's a real problem is if you actually don't trust the other person or you don't respect them. Once you lose respect and trust, I mean, that's when things just...
Yeah.
Whether that's true for team member relationships, and it's true for any other relationship too.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So we talked about, you know, kind of how your role has moved into assisting me with all kinds of random things, and then the coaching plan, and then live events, and now we're doing a lot of workshops as well. Maybe for people who are thinking about, I know a lot of leaders who don't have assistance at all, or somebody who's, you know, I think I could help somebody. I think I could help a leader somewhere, you know, be better and help the organization as a whole. What are some things that you found that have been helpful between us that might be helpful for other people that are trying to work together in that capacity?
I think one of the biggest thing is just the leader or whoever, like for you give me the authority to figure things out. Mm-hmm. I think that is, I would probably say that's the most important, because you can't, and that doesn't have to just be an assistant type of a role. That could just be, I mean, it does speak to the assistant role, but like even me and Allie in the event, like,
right,
you delegate, but you give the authority to be able to figure stuff out. And that gives me the confidence to figure it out. It gives me the confidence to find the resources to help get it done. If a leader or someone is like an authoritarian type figure and doesn't give someone the authority or the trust to get something done, then the assistant or the helper is not confident to get it done. They're going to keep continuing to ask. Or if you required me to run everything by you before I could get it done, for one, it's going to take 3 years longer than it would ever need to be. You don't need to know all the details. So I think if a leader is listening to this, like, you have to trust the person that's helping you, and you don't need to know every single, like, do you need to hear, see the 7 emails that I sent to just to get this one thing moved forward? But at the same sense, I know you and I have talked about, sometimes it's hard because things are just magically done, and sometimes you don't see the work that all went into it. So it's, you know, so from an assistant's point of view, sometimes I want you to know all the work that went into doing it, but I do know that you trust me and, you know, you respect that I'm getting the things.
But if I don't know what's getting done, it's hard to recognize.
Exactly. That. So sometimes,
and it feels like, I'm doing all this work and not getting, I'm not even being seen.
I think it would be easy to, if you give an assistant the authority to just get things done and you trust them to get it done, the downfall to that could be that your assistant isn't feeling appreciated. If,
note to self.
You know, I feel very appreciated. You do a great job with that kind of stuff with the team. But no, I think that, you know, someone could take that to the extreme and it's like, well, they should be getting it done. And the other person is like doing stuff after hours and they're working themselves to the bone to get it done. And it's magically done. And, you know, no, they didn't realize all the work that went into it or the obstacles that happened to come up during the pandemic or whatever. And something happened they didn't know. But I think the biggest takeaway would be trust and giving someone the authority to get it done, and not just saying that you do. Well, I told them, you know, I trust them to get it done, but then you're checking up every 5 minutes,
right?
And you're, you know, that's not helpful. So,
one of the things that you just said that I think is really important is this idea of, like, not just telling you what to do, but giving you the authority to do it and having autonomy in that. One of the things I always say as part of my job that I see as a leader is to create a space where people have the opportunity to fail, just not fail catastrophically. And as I was thinking about that, like, somebody like you, who's like a hard driver and wants to be successful, is always going to fear failure itself to some extent. But what you should, what I don't think a team member should ever fear is me, or the leader, I should say, or the organization itself. Like, you're not, you don't want to lose. Like, you're competitive. You want to win, but there's going to be things that you know, don't work the way that you want them to. But what I don't want is for you to be like, oh my gosh, what's Jay going to think of X, Y, or Z, you know, and be fearful that you're going to lose your job or, you know, have some kind of major reprimand or whatever else. If I know that you're operating in the best interest, that's why I have to give authority and autonomy in those situations.
And I think that I learned that through how you handle failing. Like, if you admit, wow, I definitely could have handled that better, that, you know, that was a bad idea on my part or whatever. Really, when you lead by example and you, if you want something of your team member and you don't do that yourself, then that's, they don't know what to do because they don't see an example of that. So to that point, I think I myself and the team have seen you own your mistakes and just say, like, okay, sorry guys, we had a scramble. Like, we're even dealing with something
that
right
was
now.
Today. Yeah.
a last minute scramble thing that we committed to something to a client.
I committed something to a client.
And I say we just, but anyways, you know, and on hindsight, we realize, you know, that we shouldn't have even committed to that to start, but we still got it done. But hearing you say that, so now next event, I'm going to screw something up. I'm going to be like, okay, well, we definitely shouldn't have gone with that vendor, you know, whatever.
And you just move on.
But the fact that I've seen you and I've seen that example play out, I feel comfortable and confident enough not to feel like a complete disappointment or whatever else.
Right.
I'm allowed that space because I've seen that example.
One of the things that I really love as it relates to the subject for anybody that's not seen it, there's probably other people that have talked about this, but Michael Hyatt has this, that's actually a blog post. It's probably one of his books too. And he talks about different levels of delegation. Mm. And so here's how he describes them. Level one is do as I say. That's like a, what I would call a go for task, like go for this, go for that, go for this. Those are sometimes there's things like that, like go, will you go do this for me? That's not a problem. Like everybody has to do things like that. The second level, though, is research and report. So I might say, instead of saying level one would be, Hannah, go book a room at the Embassy Suites for these two nights. And she's like, great, got it, done. Mm-hmm. Level two is, hey, will you find a hotel that's going to be a good fit and then let me know what you find for this trip? And that happens sometimes. The third one would be research and recommend. That's like the next layer level. It's like, hey, I looked at it. There's three options, but I really think you should do this one.
Like workcation.
Right. Yeah. Know, so there's here's three options, but I think that the best option is an option number two. Mm-hmm. Well, you probably put it number one, but still. And then level four is decide and inform. So decide and inform is I ask you to do something and you just do it and you decide what to do. And then you tell me what happened afterwards. Mm-hmm. And that happens sometimes too. And then the fifth one, which is the highest level of delegation, which is totally act independently. So this means whatever the decision you think is best, no need to report back. I trust you completely. I need you to follow through and you have my full support. Mm-hmm. And that last line right there is the most important because I think some people act like they give this kind of delegation, but there's a difference in like subjugating my responsibility as a leader and supporting my team. So I could say, hey, just do whatever you think. And then when you do it and I'm like, oh my God, Hannah, like what were you thinking? Like, why did you do it that way? There's people that act like that. And that's ridiculous. The line in that that's so important is make whatever decision you think is best. And then the last line says, you have my full support. In other words, if it doesn't work out, I'm going to be like, all right, well, we'll figure something out better next time. And then we'll move on.
Yeah. I think from the coaching side, I operate a lot in that last one where mm-hmm. I take ownership of the coaching side. But then as an assistant, I think you operate a lot in the number four, the level four, which is what? Delegate.
Decide and inform.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. as an assistant, I'm going to go ahead and book these things or whatever and do all this for you. But then I'm going to give you a report like, hey, here's the schedule. This was, you know, this is what you're booked at this place, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think from an assistant point of view and from your point of view, it's good to know and make sure you might assume that I know what level you right. want me to operate on, but you can't assume that, you know.
And, and it's not like everything's always at one level in a relationship. Like there's still going to be things where I'm like,
all of those.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's some things that are all those, but I think the communication thing between the two of us is me going, all right, I need you to do this, but create clarity around mm-hmm. like what kind of level it's at.
Yeah.
So that you know, like, okay, he just wants me to deal with this whole thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, for example, I have a webinar that I'm going to do in a little over an hour here, and I've not even seen the keynote deck yet. And that sounds crazy for some of y'all out there listening, but that's how, like, that's comfortable for me because Hannah's building it off of stuff that she knows that I know, but she wrote it, designed it, set it up, scheduled it, send out the emails, send out the reminders, is tracking all the stats. And what I'm going to do is show up and teach the webinar. Mm-hmm. But that's not how it used to be. Like it used to be that I did all of those things and slowly I kind of said, all right, now go do this, now go do that. And now it's kind of like, all right, we decide on the webinar topics together and then we go from there, you know, and you pretty much sort the rest of the stuff out. I think that's like the growth in relationship, growth in our working relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it all just goes back to personality types, you know, like mm-hmm. you said, like, some of those things, I don't know the level that I'm supposed to work in. It might not be super clear, but from my personality type and just my role, I veer on the side of just get it done and then just let you know.
Right.
Like pretty much do and ask for forgiveness later type of concept because I know that you'll change it or correct it or whatever. But I think a good assistant and someone who is working with a team, you just veer on the side of doing the work and getting it done.
All right, so we've talked about all kinds of things so far, delegation, authority, autonomy, change in roles, coaching, live events, and just all the things. In the midst of all of that, you know, one of the things that's really important to us here at Business Builders is family, not just our external families, but treating each other as if we actually care about each other. But, you know, all of us have all kind of other things going on outside of home. So I always like to talk about work-life balance. It means something different to everybody, and it's different in different seasons of life. But you've got two little ones, you got a husband, you've got extended family,
you've got...
Lightning. Is that his name? Lightning?
Yep, my hamster's name is Lightning. My kid. Sorry, y'all. Actually, it's really mine.
That'll be the cover we use for the podcast. Yeah. We'll get a lot of clicks. And so, you know, as a working mom, like who is hungry and ambitious from a career perspective and a growth perspective, and loves her children deeply and wants to be an amazing mom, and loves her husband and wants to be a great wife, like that's a lot to deal with. So where have you gotten better in those areas over time, and what do you think good companies can do to support their people through all different seasons of life?
Ooh.
It's an easy question.
Back to Lightning.
Yeah, let's talk about the hamster.
Gosh, it's a journey. It's a lot of stuff to do. Again, I know I keep saying this, but it does come down to personality type. I've actually had a lot of conversations about like being a working mom and stuff like that recently, and how does that work? And I actually get more times than I can count, how do you do it all? That's the question that I get. But I think that...
And you're like, I just do it.
Yeah. Well, no, I think I really do believe that there's more time in the day that people... There's more time than you realize in a day. And it comes down to purpose. What's important to you. And then just making it work. I know that doesn't like seem right, but if you really think about it, you know, we've talked about this in the office. Like when people say, oh, I didn't have time to get to that. No, you did have time. You just didn't make it a priority.
Right.
So, and what I found to balance it all is you will make time for the things that you want to make time for.
Yep.
So when I went back to school and was doing night school while my husband was at the fire station, and I worked full time and I had two kids and they were in sports, that was important to me. That was a passion, a dream, a bucket list item. And I just did it. Like I went to class at my class ended at 10 p.m. I picked up my kids from sleeping at my in-law's house, carried them, load them up in the car by myself and tucked in the bed, took a shower and crashed. Sometimes didn't. I had to still do schoolwork, and then I came to work in the morning. What I will say is don't hear me saying all of this stuff, because you can. Something will have to give. So in that season, we had to not have the kids do sports when we were in the midst of it. That was a sacrifice, and they asked and asked and asked. But in my mind, I told myself the reward of me finishing is I will get to enroll my kids in sports. Or when I finish, I will get to get back to doing date nights or whatever. That doesn't mean we still didn't do date nights, but it was more like sitting on the couch playing cards or something. But so you can do all the things you want to do if you want to do them and you make time for it. But you do have to realize that everything's a season. I say that even when you're raising kids, your kids peeing all over the floor. It's a season. Typically, kids, it's like 3 month seasons, whatever. But sometimes you just have to buckle down and get it done if it's important to you. Now, if you're busy with all these things and five of them are not important to you and you're just spinning your wheels doing it, you're not going to be fulfilled when you lay down at night, because you've just felt like you wasted all this time. You did these things for other people. Like you can do all these things for these kids, but that is meaningful to you because you want to be a parent, great parent, whatever. But I do think it comes down to purpose, making you will make the time for the things you want to make the time for. Don't say I can't do it. Sometimes logistics, you can't because you are a single mom and you can't get there. And who will pick up the kid when I'm in a meeting at work? Who's picking up my kid? But even to that, for me, it comes down to faith. If something's meant to be, it will happen. And asking for help and things like that. But you don't go and ask for help and you don't reach out and you don't do all these things for something you don't want to do.
Yeah.
So I really think it comes down to who you are as a person and maybe sitting down. And if you don't have all those things and you don't really know what you want to do, then my advice would be to sit down and really do a deep dive in what you want your life to look like in 10 years. And for me, I wanted to achieve those things so I could show my kids that you can work and you can raise a family, you can get your degree, and you can be married and all these things. And mm-hmm. That's who I want to be with my grandkids. And I want to show them that you can do all those things. But also, I wanted to personally experience all of those things and be a witness and show other people that you can do it. And I believe that the work pays off and it's mm-hmm. just a season.
You know, I love what you said about like making things a priority. Like, don't say that you don't have time. I always tell people, instead of saying, I don't have time for that, say it out loud, that's not a priority for me. Mm. And so
hard to say.
It is hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, and if your spouse looks at you and says, hey, can we go on a date? And you're like, I don't have time for that. Change those words to, that is not a priority for me. I mean, you might not want to say that to your spouse, yeah. but think
maybe,
it in your head.
Maybe filter that.
But you need to think it because that's the truth. The truth is it's not a priority. And one of the workshops that Hannah and I do is a lot of fun and usually pretty emotional, always emotional, actually. It's called Hero on a Mission. And when Hannah was talking about like the 10-year thing, like that's one thing that we do in that is go, what does it look like at the end? Like when you said, Hannah, like what? I want to be able to tell these stories to my grandchildren. Like that's an aspirational vision of the future that you can go, yes, this is hard right now. It's extremely hard. I'm completely exhausted. And it's going to be a great story for my grandkids. Like that's a big dream. That's a big idea. That's a big vision. It's a big future. And I think a lot of people just run through life without taking the time to stop and go, hey, let me think about this for a minute. Mm-hmm. Let me actually decide what is a priority.
And what drives you? So for me, right. What drives me is helping people. Well, I believe I could help more people if I educate myself in certain things. You know, and it's like for doing coaching, I really believe that we can impact a lot of people by doing this. And it's going to take a lot of work and it's going to be messy. And
well, it's taking a ton of time just to make some money at it. You know, it's a new foray. That's a fancy word. I don't even know if that's the right word. It's a new area of business that is not a focus, has been a focus for 23 years of work. Mm-hmm. And so now we're starting new things. And so there was a lot of micro failures along the way already. We're like, that's not going to work. That doesn't work. Mm-hmm. We tried that. Nobody's buying that. We can't sell that. That's the wrong price. That's the wrong description. We got to fix that. We got to change it. And now all of a sudden we're starting to like find traction in these areas and going, okay, hold on. This is helping people. This is making change. This is creating revenue. You have to have revenue to make profit.
Keeping the eye on the vision the whole time.
Right.
We knew we can do this and we can help people through this. We just have to figure it out.
Now we're planning our next live event, which is more niche. So if anybody's out there listening that runs an agency, Hannah is helping me. Well, by helping me, she's basically doing it. Planning this agency retreat. So we're going to do what we call Agency Builders Retreat. It's going to be in March, the end of March here in St. Augustine Beach. It's going to be awesome. And really excited about that. Well, Hannah, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. It was good.
You are a huge help to me and an asset to our team and just a great person to be around. So I'm really thankful to have you.
Oh, thank you so much. Now I got to go edit this podcast and make it live.
That's right. All right, everybody else, thanks for being here for another episode of Building a Business That Lasts. I hope you're enjoying these internal conversations of behind the scene of how we think and work here. My desire is that it gives you kind of some perspective and just things to think about in your own life for you personally and for your teams. See you soon.